the Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, we talk about UFOs, alien abduction, we talk about ghosts and Sasquatch, along with other cryptozoology, conspiracy theories, all sorts of stuff here on the show. And Cherie DeSouce, our MUFON investigator, out today, but in is Mr. Nick Pope. You've seen him on Ancient Aliens. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
So we see you on all of the UFO TV shows, the disclosure segments. Why you? How did you get into this whole UFO thing?
Well, I did it for the British government, essentially, and I think that's why the media and the TV companies come to me a fair bit, because a lot of people come to this subject because they've had a personal sighting. Some people because they pursue research as a private interest. But there are not many of us on the record who've come to it through having had this as a government job. And that's how I came to it. I worked for the British Ministry of Defense for 21 years, which is the equivalent of the DOD over here in the US where I now live. And for much of the early 90s, I ran the UK's UFO program. So I had to research and investigate the phenomenon and effectively be the front person for the policy on this.
Did you have any background in any of this kind of stuff?
No, I didn't. And I think with hindsight, that's probably an advantage. I think it was the best way to come into this particular topic. I had never seen anything myself. I did not particularly have an interest in it. I didn't have any particularly strong beliefs either way. So I came in really with an open mind and a blank sheet of paper, all those sorts of cliches. And like I say, I think that was the best thing because I was unencumbered by any baggage in terms of what I brought to the job. To me, I know this is going to sound absolutely crazy and people will be going, oh, no. But to me, it was just another government job. It was just a posting. It was a three or four-year tour of duty that I had to get through and hopefully do well and get a promotion out of it, which I did, by the way. I was young and ambitious. I was in the junior managerial grade, and I wanted to get on and get up. I think it wasn't, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't the job I had hoped to get, the job that all the ambitious young high flyers wanted. We wanted to work in one of the, you know, either the Secretary of State's office or one of the undersecretaries of state, and we wanted to be, even if you were just managing their diary or kind of dealing with their parliamentary schedule, it was those sorts of jobs that really could make or break a career, and those are the ones everyone wanted. But so I got UFOs and I was like, really, is this going to be a little bit of a backwater? But of course it turned out to be a life-changing moment.
So you go in wanting, you know, hoping to get in this one job. They're like, here, have UFOs. You're like, oh, okay, I'll take what I can get. It's a foot in the door, right? So did you start seeing, like, UFO-y things that couldn't be explained and kind of eyebrow-raising stuff?
The bread and butter of the job was the reports. They would come in mainly from the public, but sometimes from our own people, from military personnel, pilots, radar operators. And I would, the day-to-day job was going through these reports. We'd get about 200 or 300 each year. I had to investigate them. And sure, at the end of the day, most of them turned out to be misidentifications. People were just seeing aircraft lights, weather balloons, satellites, meteors, and a whole bunch of other things. They weren't lying about it. They were just misperceiving it. But the ones, obviously, that were of most interest as I mentioned, were the commercial airline pilots, military fast jet pilots who would encounter these things, radar operators who track them, where we had, and cases where we had maybe photos and videos, because then we could get intelligence community imagery analysts onto it and bring the whole, I guess, resources and capabilities of the intelligence community to bear on this, and it elevated it more to just somebody's story if you had physical evidence in terms of radar tapes, photos, videos, things like that.
Did you get to review, like, past incidences, like the Rendlesham Forest incident or anything like that?
Yes, I had access to the entire archive of files. I mean, literally hundreds of files, tens of thousands of pages of documents dating back actually to the 40s. And so, yes, because the Rendlesham Forest incident, which you mentioned, it as Britain's best known and most compelling UFO incident, we were still getting questions about it. When I was doing that job, of course, it was, I guess, when I, you know, 11 years in the past. But I soon realized that we were still getting questions on it, sometimes from members of parliament, sometimes from the media, sometimes from the UFO community. So I reopened the investigation, which is quite controversial. You know, normally things like that, it's a little bit politically sensitive because it could be an implied criticism of your predecessors. And, of course, the Secretary of State for Defense had routinely told the British Parliament that this was of no defense significance. So we were treading on fairly dangerous ground reopening any investigation in case we were ended up by implication contradicting our own bosses. So I had to tread carefully, but this was just too big to ignore, and sure enough, the original investigation had been mishandled. There'd been poor information sharing between the United States government, the United Kingdom government, and this wasn't lights in the sky. Something, for those that don't know the case, something actually landed, and we had physical trace evidence in terms of radioactivity levels at the landing site, which our own defense intelligence staff, specialists, scientific and technical intelligence people, said that the radioactivity was significantly higher than the average background, and this was, you know, just a few tens of miles from London as the crow flies.
That was the incident where the gentleman, like, touched the craft and then gets this binary code embedded in his memory. That was the same incident, right?
Yes. It's an extraordinarily deep and complex case with all sorts of twists and turns and things that you would dismiss almost as science fiction, were it not for the fact that so much of this can be backed up by declassified Ministry of Defense files, which are now in the public domain. And I actually came out of retirement to help with that program, by the way, to declassify and release. I think we've got out about 60,000 pages of documents on all this, not just Rendlesham Forest, of course, but I think somewhere in the region of 12,000 studies, citing reports over the years, but also classified intelligence studies, discussions about how to play this subject in the media. It goes on and on. But yeah, Rendlesham is extraordinary, and we could probably do a four-hour show on this and only scratch the surface. If you'll forgive me a book plug, I did team up with two of the, I mean, this was all military witnesses. These were United States Air Force bases on British soil where all this happened. Rendlesham Forest lies between two of those bases. So I teamed up with two of the most important witnesses, and we co-wrote a book on this called Encounter in Rendlesham Forest. And it's the only UFO book that has needed security clearance from both the United States and the United Kingdom government.
And you can find this online, right?
Yes. I just Amazon and all the usual book sites and, okay. and probably eBay too. Quite an adventure writing this book. And of course, I mean, stress to you now, I'm not a whistleblower. I mean, I take my security oath seriously, and it binds me for life, even though I took early retirement some years ago from the Ministry of Defense. And same with the two United States Air Force guys that I wrote the book with, John Burroughs and Jim Peniston. None of us are whistleblowers. We all wanted to make sure that we didn't cross any red lines. So I was very careful. I approached my former bosses at the Ministry of Defense in the UK. I approached the Pentagon people that deal with security clearance of manuscripts and things, and we really wanted to get this right. I mean, it was very important, and so we knew not to cross those red lines, as I say. And fortunately, we did eventually get official sign off on the manuscript from UK and the US, and the rest is history.
So that was, you know, back in the 80s, that incident. And have we had anything near as cool as that happen, you know, more recently?
Well, the big ones, I think, of course, are these extraordinary series of incidents involving the United States Navy. And there are two main encounters that are being talked about, most famous of which is the 2004 incident involving the USS Nimitz. And this is the so-called Tic Tac incident, where a number of different pilots and radar operators encountered something, effectively buzzing the Nimitz and the various ships in the task force. And one of the pilots, David Fravor, made this very famous comment. He said, "I don't know what it was, but I want to fly one." And when an F-18 Super Hornet pilot tells you something like that and gets seriously impressed by the speed and maneuverability and acceleration of an object, you know you're dealing with something extraordinary. And, of course, there's just an extraordinary amount of evidence in the public domain about this. The story ended up on the front page of the New York Times about 2.5 years ago. Now I've lost count of the number of different fast jet pilots and radar operators who've gone on the record with this. And there's congressional interest, Armed Services Committee is involved, the Intelligence Committee is involved, the Pentagon set up a task force to look at all this, and even the President has dropped some fairly bizarre and intriguing hints about all this. So in the last 2.5 years, this subject has come out of the fringe and totally into the mainstream.
I remember the President saying, and I believe this was before he became President, that if he became President, he was going to pursue this whole UFO thing. Not that he believed in them per se, but he wanted to get to the bottom of it. Then you hear like Marco Rubio is part of some committee or group that wants to get more info. Do you know more about that situation?
Yes. Well, to speak to the Rubio question first, he's acting chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. A few months ago, the Intelligence Committee published the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, and tucked away in there was a section titled Unidentified Aerial Threats, and it basically it was about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, "We are aware that there's been a series of an ongoing series of incidents involving the U.S. Navy, but also involving incursions over restricted military installations, other sensitive areas, and we want some answers." So into the Intelligence Authorization Act went this demand for a report from the Director of National Intelligence. And so the Director of National Intelligence has to basically come up with a report, which is going to go to the Senate committee. It has to be in consultation with the Secretary of State for Defense, with SecDef, with FBI director, with a number of other people. This is all absolutely extraordinary.
Why did they rename UFO to UAT?
Well, now, I'm not going to brag about this, but actually, I was very largely responsible for that.
Really?
Something we did in the Ministry of Defense back in the 90s, and the reason we did it, we just felt there was too much pop culture baggage associated with the term UFO. It just sounded like something from a sci-fi movie. We could never get people to take it seriously when we said we'd like more defense resources to go on UFO research. But once you frame it in the language of threats and opportunities, and once you rebrand it, I mean, that's the way to describe it. It was a rebranding exercise.
Right.
Unidentified aerial phenomena sounds more like a science problem or a military, a defense and national security issue. And that's exactly what it is and should be. So we adopted that term in the Ministry of Defense in the 90s. A few months ago, the U.S. Navy issued new guidance to its pilots on what to do if they encounter these things, and they used the phrase UAP, and they said, this is a term we borrowed from the Brits. So,
wow.
So that's the backstory, and now, as I say, it's all UAP. With regard to President Trump, he's made a number of different comments. One of the things that the Pentagon has done is release into the public domain three videos that were taken. I mentioned these U.S. Navy encounters. Well, the thing is, three of them were captured on film. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're really interesting. They're taken with forward-looking infrared camera. You can hear the pilots sort of whooping with delight and astonishment as they're chasing these things and tracking them. So President Trump has said, I've seen it, it's one hell of a video, he said, and who knows, it may be real. And another recent interview, actually it was his Father's Day interview with Donald Trump Jr. on his TV show Triggered, and he said, I've got to ask you about this. He said, what about the UFOs? And President Trump said, well, he said, I have a lot of people who want to know, he said, and I'm going to have to think about what I'll release, and but I tell you there's a lot of interest. And then his son said to him, so do you think that you're going to declassify and release any of this? And he paused and he said, well, I'm going to have to think about that very carefully. And then he did a funny thing. He did a little, and President Trump obviously never asks for approval or permission or from anyone, really. But he does this funny little look to his side as if to say to someone off camera, was that okay? Did I go too far? And then in the last couple of weeks, he's done another interview where he said on one of the Fox News shows, he said, I'm going to take a good, strong look at this. So it's my little joke, but I always point out that aliens would be the ultimate October surprise.
You're not the first person that I've heard say something like that. You're the most credible person to say that. So how do you think that would happen? I mean, like, oh, by the way, or aliens exist, or UFOs or UAPs, they're not of this world, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and of course it's a difficult one, because it depends. People say, what will disclosure look like? The answer is, it depends what there is to disclose. If there really is an alien presence, I guess the announcement disclosure would look something like this. It would be, you know, the TV news schedules get cleared. It's announced that there's going to be a special broadcast from the White House, and everyone's kind of wondering what it is. And then it will be, you know, cut to the president, and cameras will roll, and it will be, my fellow Americans, people of the world, we are not alone. And it will be a game-changing moment in human history. Well, that's if there's a 100% certainty that that's what we're dealing with. But if it's just there's something in our skies, we don't know what it is, there are lots of competing theories. Some people say it's just Russia or China, or even our own tech, some deep black project that even other bits of government can't get to the bottom of what's going on. But you know, if that's the situation, I'm not sure what more they can say that they haven't already said, except, you know, we need someone to take this seriously, and we need to figure out what it is.
Well, I know you've heard about this kind of stuff, and maybe this isn't fair of me to ask you, so if you don't want to answer this, you've heard of the theories and the experiences some people have had with alleged beings that would be shaped like giant insects, like the praying mantis alien, or, you know, the various types. Have you ever gotten reports or people reached out to you about those types of things?
Yes, they have. And although when I was doing this job for the Ministry of Defense, most of what we got was UFO reports, we inevitably got some reports of alien abduction, some reports of animal mutilation, some crop circle reports. I mean, we really were the real-life X-Files unit because when you run a UFO program, there's nowhere else in government to send this sort of thing, so we just ended up as the focal point for all the, quote, weird stuff,
right.
Unquote.
Right.
But, yeah, we got these reports. I think we didn't get many of them because a lot of people, of course, think that the government are the bad guys in all of this anyway, and that we know all about it and that we've done some sort of deal, we're complicit with it. So in one sense, people are reporting things to us that maybe they think, or a lot of them do, that we already know. So we didn't get that many. But after I left that job, more in a private capacity, people began to approach me with their reports. And yeah, the beings that people would report came in all shapes and sizes. The little shorter, spindly ones that people call the greys, the Nordics, tall, blonde, generally thought to be benevolent. And yeah, absolutely. We got reptilians and these mantis-like entities, very tall, green or brown. Some people believe that they capable of shape-shifting, telepathic communication. I don't know what to make of all this. It's bizarre. I think when you look at all these paranormal phenomena, I am always reminded that human perception is an important part of the equation. And one person's alien is maybe another person's ghost, which is another person's angel. I mean, if you see a shadowy figure at the foot of your bed in the middle of the night, you might interpret it. Someone's going to say, it's a ghost. Someone's going to say, it's an alien. Someone's going to say, it's an angel, depending on their culture, their background, their belief system. So I don't know what, you know, these mantis-like entities, whether that's really what's there or whether people are some sort of combination of dream, nightmare, imagination, hallucination, whether there's a core phenomenon at the bottom of all this that's just, I suppose, being perceived through that cultural lens of the individual witness.
More with Nick Pope coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
And at Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, our guest today, former British Ministry of Defense, Nick Pope. You've seen him on TV shows, Ancient Aliens. You've seen him on the news. You know, I always kind of revert to Ancient Aliens because that seems like it's the big one. But I know there's other big shows that you've been on out there. I just forget the names. Do you want to throw some other names of shows?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's another show, another current show, which is a really popular one, which I do with Stephen Greenstreet from the New York Post. And we have this show called The Basement Office, which he created.
Right.
And hosts. It's just put out completely free on YouTube. And some of the episodes have got over a million views. It's been great fun to do. Stephen really knows his stuff and has a passion for it as a journalist and a filmmaker. I've enjoyed working with him on The Basement Office. Another show is Unsealed. Another one is NASA's Unexplained Files.
Mm-hmm.
Then, gosh, there's a whole bunch. But yeah, I mean, there's no getting away from the fact that Ancient Aliens, in many ways, is the big dog in the room, and it's a cultural phenomenon. Whatever you think of the ancient astronaut theory, it's a cultural phenomenon, and it's I think it started back in 2009, just as a 2-hour special on History Channel, but it proved so popular that it just ran and ran and ran, and I think now they're in the 13th or 14th season, something like that, depending on how you do the count.
Right.
But it's great fun to do. And, you know, it's not trying to push the theories on people. It's just really a sort of interesting and fun what-if show. And as the narrator says, oh, you know, could it be ... So it makes people think, whether they're believers, skeptics, or agnostics. And, yeah, it's interesting and it's fun to do.
Now, you've written 6 books?
I think so.
You've written 6 books now?
You
have Blood Brothers, you have Encounter in Rendlesham Forest, you have Open Skies, Closed Minds, The Uninvited, Operation Thunderchild, Operation Lightning Strike.
I mentioned the security clearance of the Rendlesham Forest book. All my books, fiction and nonfiction, have needed government security clearance. So even my 2 sci-fi novels, I think Operation Thunderchild and Operation Lightning Strike are the only 2 science fiction novels ever anywhere in the world to have needed this official government security clearance, because I used real incidents, and sure, I fictionalized a lot of stuff, but it's a what-if book, and it's a 2-book series. And it's about alien invasion. But all the hardware, all the strategy, the doctrine, the tactics, all the political procedures, all the military discussions and action happen as near as I can figure to how it would happen in real life. So for those reasons, it needed security clearance. And Blood Brothers, which is my most recent one, is nothing to do with UFOs or the paranormal. That's a straight thriller about counterterrorism, the intelligence agencies. That's one of the other things that I did in my 21-year Ministry of Defense career. My last posting was to the Directorate of Defense Security, where counterterrorism was pretty much at the heart of everything we did. And so, again, there, it needed clearance. Yeah, sad to say, a lot of the things in Blood Brothers are a little close to home in terms of some of the threats that are out there. But, yeah, again, obviously with counterterrorism and the work of the intelligence agencies, I wanted to be very careful not to give away any information that would be helpful to anyone with bad intentions. So I, well in advance, made sure that they had the manuscript. I was like, anything you want me to take out or change, just tell me. I'm not arguing. I'm not going to quibble over anything. And sure, there were some changes. So, yeah, there's a procedure, and I followed it.
Do you find it any coincidence, and maybe there isn't a coincidence, maybe this stuff was going to happen anyway, but it seems like such a coincidence after the Roswell era, and even that incident, the one here that happened in Washington, the Maury Island incident, that we suddenly get this burst of technology, it seems, shortly after those things happen. Do you find a coincidence in that, or is that just, you know, nothing to see here kind of thing?
I don't know. To be honest, I mean, human beings are pretty darn smart, and I think we can figure out things for ourselves without necessarily needing any help. But sure, a lot of people say that if something crashed, well, something definitely crashed at Roswell, but the question is what? If it was extraterrestrial, absolutely, almost the number one priority of the government would be to see what technology we could derive from it. Technology acquisition probably is the real reason for UFO secrecy. Nothing to do with like, oh, it would undermine religious belief or crash the banking system. It's like, could we get the technology and figure it out before Russia and China? That's the real reason.
Right.
And so, yeah, with Roswell and these allegations of crashes, I don't know what's true and what isn't, but if it was true, that is exactly what they would do. Figure out what can we back engineer, what can we reverse engineer out of this and build for ourselves.
What's next for you? What do you got anything coming up?
I guess I shouldn't talk about any TV shows before they actually air and before the network makes any announcements, but I'm pleased to say that I am back in the saddle again and out there filming. Obviously, everyone's filming very carefully and in accordance with whatever the local and the industry standard regulations are, but we're out there and we're filming again and things are happening, and I think people are hungry for new content about this, so I'm doing various TV projects that I'm working on. I suspect the live events, the big conventions, will probably be the last thing to come back. I mean, that may well take a vaccine or herd immunity or both before people feel comfortable kind of rubbing shoulders literally and metaphorically with thousands of other people at these big conventions. But you know, hopefully it'll come back in 2021. And I'm doing some writing. I'm doing some writing for some various national newspapers and things. So, yeah, busy. Lots of interesting things going on. My website is nickpope.net. I try to announce new things there, but particularly on my Twitter, which is also, you can find that on the front page of my website. It's at Nick Pope, M-O-D, for Ministry of Defense.
Did somebody steal Nick Pope? That's why you can't use Nick Pope instead of Nick Pope, M-O-D?
Funnily enough, by one of those bizarre pieces of kind of fun coincidence, there's another quite well-known Nick Pope who's a top goalkeeper for a soccer side in the U.K., and he's actually pushing for the number one England slot, keeping goal. But I think it's quite funny. Sometimes I get some things about soccer, and he probably ends up with some things about UFOs, which is kind of funny.
Are you a football fan? I know we call it soccer here, but you're from over there where soccer and football's a big deal. Are you a fan?
Yes, I follow Arsenal, and they're doing moderately this season, but it's early days, and of course it's a very funny season for everyone playing effectively behind closed doors at the moment, but you know, we'll see. But yeah, I follow it still, not as much as I did when I was back in the UK. I mean, obviously in the UK you would go to your local sports bar, sit down with friends, watch the game and have fun, and obviously soccer, and particularly British soccer, is not as well known here in the U.S., where I've lived now since 2012. So I've taken my eye off the ball a little, if you'll excuse the pun.
We've talked about a little bit of what has happened in the UFO, UAP, UAT world. We've talked about some of the more current things and what could possibly happen with disclosure. I keep hearing this word disclosure. Talking about the Tic Tac video in the Navy, I know we're kind of going back here. During this pandemic, didn't the Navy pretty much admit that they didn't know what they were, the UAP? And flying around, so like admitting that we don't know what they are, they're not ours, kind of thing?
You're absolutely right. They took the unprecedented step of issuing a press release about this. I mean, my goodness, this is a subject that 3 years ago, if you'd have reached out to public affairs, they would have said, we don't even have a program, let alone any interest. And now they're putting out press releases. They released those three videos that people have seen, and they said, yeah, they're real, they're genuine, these are exactly what people have said they are, U.S. Navy videos, and yes, the objects, as you say, are unidentified. That's the official designation. And people like Marco Rubio, who should know. And a few others have said, you know, we've received classified briefings on this, and the implication is, look, we're pretty clear, it doesn't seem to be Russia and China. We've got a fairly good indication of what everyone's got when it comes to secret prototype aircraft, missiles, and drones. So, yeah, we are in interesting times. The Pentagon issued another press release talking about the setting up of this, as they call it, UAP task force to hopefully try and get to the bottom of some of these questions. But yes, with all these official press releases, with the videos being put into the public domain, the setting up of the task force, the Senate Intelligence Committee demanding this report, it's kind of gone official in a way that it hasn't previously. And some people have said, going back to your question about disclosure, some people have said, well, this kind of is a sort of disclosure, if you think about it. They're not absolutely confirming it's extraterrestrial, because maybe they don't know. But they're saying it's real, it's in our skies, and we don't know what it is. Well, isn't that a form of disclosure?
Right, and we pretty much just ignored it.
Yeah, but now it is finally being taken seriously. It's being treated as a defense and national security issue, and finally the resources of government, military, and the intelligence community are focusing in on this, and people are realizing, yeah, we can't just laugh and roll our eyes and look the other way and ignore it. When it's our own pilots seeing these things, and when we've got it on film and radar, we need to get to the bottom of what's going on in our airspace. Who is it? What do they want?
Right. You've heard this probably a thousand times about close encounters of the third kind, supposedly based on a true event that happened where we swapped some of our people, and they went off into the, you know, great blue yonder with the aliens to learn about them. Do you believe it? Do you think that's actually true?
No, I'm skeptical about this. This is generally referred to and tied up with the Project Serpo, and people can like Google that if they want and take a look at it. I'm skeptical. That said, if one day this turns out to be all true and real and there's open contact, I guess the idea of a sort of exchange program is exactly what we would probably look to do. I mean, an exchange program is generally a great way to learn more about each other. And when we do make open contact, if that day comes, I think that's what will happen. So I don't think it's happened before, but if all this pans out the way some people think it might, it maybe is one for the future.
If the British Ministry of Defense asked you to come out of retirement to go back to work, would you do it?
No, I don't think so. I'm happily retired and living here in the desert. I wouldn't mind. I'd come back on a sort of consultancy basis.
Right.
And you know, I don't want to go into too many details, but I've done one or two, I suppose you could call them deeds for you know, the powers that be, a couple of times since I have retired. I mentioned my involvement with the program to declassify and release the archive of files. I mean, there I was more in a sort of spokesperson role. But I've done a little bit of behind the scenes briefing of certain people and organizations, and I'm happy to do that, but not gonna go back to the UK and do this full time. I mean, yeah, been there, done that.
You were a Men in Black, weren't you?
Well, I guess literally when I wore a dark suit on those particular days, I was a real life Man in Black.
What if the
but
U.S.
I didn't have any of those fun gadgets to use on UFO witnesses.
Right. Now, what if the U.S. government said, hey, we'll make you an offer you can't refuse? Would you do it? Does it depend on, like, if they paid you billions of dollars or something?
Oh, well, if we're talking that, sure.
Okay.
I don't know. I think Same answer. I'm happy where I am, but again, if they asked me to do a specific thing related to all of this, and as I say, I have occasionally done the odd briefing here and there, and that's more in a sort of advisory consultancy role. But there are probably people out there. Well, there are people out there with rather more recent experience of this. So at some stage, it's going to be time for me to exit the stage and perhaps hand over to other people on this. But you know, it depends. I think, and I know that this is a little bit of a cop-out answer, but my answer is I'd have to look at any request on a case-by-case basis and see what the job was, see how worthwhile I thought it was, whether I could add value to the project, and to see how that would impact my home life. So, yeah, case-by-case basis.
Right. That almost sounds like a politician there sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know where I could have gotten that from. No, they train us to give these kind of answers.
Now, do you think being the position that you've held and, you know, doing the stuff you've had to do you think they, like, follow you or bug your communications? Like, is our phone call bugged right now, you think? Just so they're keeping tabs, making sure you're not blabbing or anything?
Well, I think they know me well enough to know that I wouldn't. I doubt this specific call is bugged, but I know that. But even if it's in a friendly social way, people are certainly following me. I wrote a big feature for a British national newspaper a couple of weeks ago about a well-known British case, and I got an email from my boss, my old boss at the Ministry of Defence, saying, you know, I see this story has hit the papers. And then I even got another friend and former Ministry of Defence colleague pop up on my Facebook feed to say, oh, yes, I remember, because we were discussing, the article was about some spectacular UFO photos that have now mysteriously gone missing. And she popped up on Facebook and said, oh, I remember that picture on your office wall. So yeah, people are watching and listening, but not necessarily in a sinister way, just kind of staying in touch. Heck, I'm still in the Ministry of Defense Fantasy Football League.
What other kind of interests do you have? Let's get a little personal, if you don't mind. I mean, do you have, like, a favorite food, favorite TV shows, stuff like that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Elizabeth and I live in Tucson, in the great state of Arizona, and we're on a beautiful desert property, like 3.5 acres of natural desert right up against the national park. So we like desert hikes to get into personal interests and things, and we love our wildlife. And of course, we here, you know, whether we're hiking in the national park or whether it's just coming through our own backyard, we've seen coyotes, javelinas, bobcats, mule deer, hawks, lots and lots of the smaller stuff, rabbits and squirrels and all sorts of other birds. But we're waiting for our first mountain lion sighting. Haven't got to that yet. Lots of rattlesnakes and scorpions as well, so we have to tread carefully, but we love them all. So yeah, wildlife, hiking. When it comes to film and TV, well, we do like our film noirs, and we like some of the great miniseries that get put out. We're watching Tremé, about the aftermath of the Hurricane Katrina,
right,
in New Orleans. We watched a great miniseries called The Night Of. What else? My goodness. The Looming Tower. Lots of things. So, yeah. And occasionally we will be found in a bar dancing to some country music. Although, I'm not sure whether dancing is allowed at the moment. But, no, I don't think it is. Rather, bizarrely, but
right.
you can do. Well, we won't get into all that. It's kind of Kafka-esque. You can do some things, but not others, which are kind of like the same things, actually. But
right. Especially vote, you know? Whoa. I feel you.
So that's, yeah, I hope that's given you a little insight into the more personal stuff.
Well, you know, you're always such a gentleman. You're so polite to me, and you're so courteous. I so appreciate you for taking the time to just... to talk with us today. I appreciated you coming out to the event. I think ours was like the last big event in the state before this whole lockdown thing happened, so we made it through and all that, but I so appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Johnny. It's been great to reconnect and chat again, and I think we've covered a lot of ground in this interview, actually, and I hope people are going to find it interesting and thought-provoking and provoke a lot of discussion and debate, I hope.
What can we find at nickpope.net? What kind of stuff do you got there?
It's just an overview of who I am and what I did for the British government, and just gives people an insight into the sorts of government work I did on this. And as I say, it also links to Facebook and Twitter, but Twitter is particularly where I tend to put my short notice announcements of upcoming TV shows and media articles I've done or anything else that has caught my eye. So, yeah, it's an overview. It's just a little window into my world.
Twitter hasn't banned you or censored you yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I've got one of those blue star, blue shield things, so maybe that gives you a little bit more leeway.
Okay.
But yeah, as always, I guess I have to be careful with what I post, and obviously I'm somebody who was charged with a lot of classified information back in the day on not just on UFOs but on a whole range of projects, and I wouldn't dream of divulging it, of course, but yeah, I always have to be careful.
Well, thanks again for taking the time to talk with us. You can be contacted, or your book's available at nickpope.net. And if you want to hear more about Nick Pope, UFO sightings, Sasquatch reports, you want to contact us, or just yell at us for being tinfoil hat wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Alien, Sasquatch, All Things Strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.